Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we are committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza, an allied healthcare professional with over 25 years of experience. My career has primarily spanned private physical therapy and public school athletics. Driven by curiosity and a passion for the industry, I created the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast to explore the ever-evolving landscape of healthcare with a focus on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we'll dive into the challenges healthcare professionals encounter and discuss how collaboration can enhance understanding within the industry. Our goal is to improve the experience for patients and athletes alike. Now on to the show.
On this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, I'd like to welcome Julimar Avila, Olympic swimmer for the Honduras national team. Julimar is a name synonymous with determination, resilience, and groundbreaking achievements in the world of competitive swimming. Her journey from a young swimmer to an Olympic semifinalist is a testament to her hard work and dedication. She was a semifinalist in the Tokyo 2021 Olympic Games, as she made history becoming the first Honduran swimmer and the first university swimmer to qualify for an Olympic semifinal in the 200-meter fly. Most recently, she returned to the Olympic stage competing in the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. She's a Pan American Game finalist, a testament to her prowess and skill in swimming. Four-time LC World Championship competitor, demonstrating her consistent performance on the world stage. A multi-gold medalist CCCAN, her dominance in the Central American and Caribbean region. A Central American Games gold medalist, further highlighting her regional dominance in the sport. A competitive swimmer since age 5, Julimar's journey began in Boston. Her passion for swimming was sparked by accompanying her mother to swim lessons. Her mother, a teacher, her father, an athletic director and soccer coach, provided a balanced environment of academic discipline and athletic rigor. This unique upbringing set the stage for Julimar's future success. In 2010, Julimar's talent was recognized when she was selected for the Honduran national team for CAMX, her first international meet. This event featured teams from Central America and Mexico, was a significant stepping stone in her career. Julimar's swimming career began at Weston High School, where her exceptional talent quickly became evident. During her time there, she broke over 14 school records, showcasing her prowess in the pool. Her leadership and skill were instrumental in guiding the team to their first state championship victory in 2015, a testament to her dedication and hard work. Continuing her athletic journey, Julimar swam for Boston University, where she became a key player in the team's success, her performance earning her a distinction of being a three-time All-Patriot League selection. Not only did she excel at the college level, but she also set an impressive 13 national records for Honduras while at BU. Her time at Boston University was marked by a profound commitment to both athletic and academic pursuits. While making waves in the swimming community, Julimar was equally focused on her education. She pursued a bachelor's degree in human physiology at Boston University, demonstrating her passion for understanding the human body and its capabilities. Her academic journey did not stop there. She further enhanced her education by completing a graduate certificate in health informatics from BU's Metropolitan College. This achievement coincided with her training for the 2021 Tokyo Olympics, highlighting her ability to excel in multiple demanding arenas simultaneously. She most recently completed a master's degree in international health management from Imperial College Business School in London, where she continued her training alongside her studies. Julimar's participation in the 2021 Tokyo Olympics was a defining moment in her career. Reflecting on her semifinal swim, she described it as the calmest she ever felt during a competition. This experience, she says, was the cherry on top of 19 years of dedication to the sport. The support she received from her community and the impact of her historic achievement resonated deeply with Julimar. Her message to the Latinos and aspiring athletes is one of perseverance and courage. Don't back away from a challenge. If something is presenting to you and you're a little nervous, it's okay, try. The worst that can happen is that it doesn't work out, but you'll never know if you don't try. Julimar's journey is not just about breaking records. It's about breaking barriers and inspiring the next generation to aim high and never give up on their dreams. Now on to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast. This week, I have Julimar Avila, who is a
graduate of Weston High School, 2015, Julamar, is that correct?
Yep.
Swam at Weston, butterfly swimmer for BU, graduated there in 2019. And she was actually a semifinalist at the Tokyo 2021 Olympic Games, swam for Honduras. And I have to say, this is my first Olympic athlete that I have spoken to, and hopefully there's many more on the horizon. But Julamar and I crossed paths a little bit while she was at Weston. We were just talking pre-recording how in high school, the swimmers would go right to the pool and then get out of the pool. And if they had something wrong, they'd come see me. I think Julamar had a few little things. And, you know, she discussed how once she got into college, how having that availability of someone in the high school, not understanding how that is worth kind of its weight in gold until you get into the higher level. So Julamar, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Can you explain a little bit about kind of your journey going, you know, as a young, I think 5 years old, you started swimming, mm-hmm. Your parents got you into swimming. How did that journey kind of move forward to your collegiate and Olympic swimming?
Yeah, so I started swimming, I guess the first time I touched the water, which is something that I always kind of put in. My dad's a coach, but he was a coach for soccer and now coaches golf. But I really want to put in, like, my mom kind of got me into it because my mom wanted to learn how to swim. So she would take me to the pool. And then I think my dad's kind of coaching mentality was, okay, if she's going to be in a sport, she needs to have that discipline. So right from the age of 5, my mom would start taking me to the community pools and I'd go to all those practices and I started competing. And both my parents are Honduran. So every time we'd go in the summer to Honduras, again, I think my dad with that mentality that he was like, you can have days off, but you need to kind of stick with your sport. I would go and train with my club team in Honduras. And so I started representing them when I was 7 and would come from the States to Honduras and kind of just keep training, never really having that break. But I think that really helped me obviously kind of develop my skills. And so swam club team through middle school while I was at Weston. And then I swam high school at Weston, then got a scholarship to go to Boston University, all at the same time while representing Honduras internationally. So my first international competition, I want to say, was like 2010, 2011. And then from there, I was going to World Championships in 2013, Pan American Games. There's short course or like long course championships. Qualified for Tokyo or competed in Tokyo, was a semifinalist there. And then just competed in Paris as well. So it's been quite a long journey, but yeah, it's been good so far.
It's pretty amazing. I guess your dad was preaching the Bill Belichick mantra before Bill Belichick was, with no days off, right?
Yeah, very much so. And then also, I think he was kind of like, well, my mom was kind of like the academic part where she was like, you can't forget about school. So she was always having me super disciplined with school, especially Weston, with like kind of the academic rigor that it had, and then BU. And my dad was also like, well, to get to BU or to get to any university, we want a scholarship. And so you got to get good at your sport. So at one point I did soccer. I even did field hockey at Weston. And then mm-hmm. It was kind of like, okay, you need to kind of grind and figure out which one's going to get you there.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, I think the sport of swimming, I think you obviously need to do that given the amount of time commitment that has to go into it, because it is so minute, the changes in times, right?
Oh my gosh,
I was talking to another graduate, Jack Blazinski, and he said he was 0.01 seconds away from medaling when he was at, or actually not medaling, from qualifying to go to the Olympic Games mm-hmm. his senior year at Florida.
It's literally, so, yeah, you work so, so, so hard. Like the event that I qualified in Paris in, it took me 5 years to drop time in that one event. And it just, and I
crazy.
Wasn't even training for that event either. I was training for another one. And I think because I wasn't overthinking, I was like, I just need a race and I need to get there. I happened to drop and I was kind of like, oh my gosh, like the last time I touched that time was literally 2017.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I talked to your former coach, Coach Valley, and every year he is amazed at how much faster the swimmers are getting in the pool. Mm. When, you know, when you were in school, it was always like, this is the fastest team I've seen, and I don't know how they're going to beat these times. And all of a sudden, there's athletes blowing those out of the water. And it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really great to kind of see the sport develop, whether or not it's like with honestly, small details, everybody improving their underwaters or improving their starts. But yeah, it's wild to see the times that were kind of winning before and then what it takes to win.
So if, for some of the young listeners that may be listening or even parents that their child wants to go into swimming or be competitive, sure, what are some of the things you had to overcome in high school or middle school, high school, college, and then getting to the Olympics? And how did that socially change the way you thought about things and academically? Because you touched a little bit on academics, like you have to grind academically and in the pool. But how did that have a toll on you growing up as a kid, you know, with friendships? Like, how did that create you as a person today?
So I think another layer to that, especially going to Weston, was that I was a MECO student. So living in Boston and then having to travel to Weston, I think I really had to get into the mindset that even if somebody wanted to hang out after school, I couldn't just be like, yeah, I'm going to stay after school, because like my parents would have to come pick me up. And that wasn't such a close proximity to obviously where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
I think that also helped me with time management, just kind of understanding like, okay, if I want to do something after school, then I have training. I have to get my schoolwork done in order to then do my training and go home and sleep. So I think for the young listeners, there is a bit of sacrifice. I think a lot of athletes will kind of tell you that, like, if you really want to be good at your sport, there is a bit of sacrifice, whether it is the social aspect. Maybe I can't go out with my friends every single afternoon after school, or there's sometimes I have to pick and choose like, okay, on the weekend I'll go out, but another time I can't do that because I need to kind of grind out this assignment in order to be training better. But, and I actually was speaking with this to somebody recently, they like do Ironmans, and they were kind of saying like, oh, like, what do you think is the difference between, because he's like, I'm really good at swimming and I feel like I can get better, but then obviously I'm not at the level yet to like qualify for the Olympics. And I was like, I think something really big is understanding that you are going to make that sacrifice, like make that big choice. So one of the things that I did was like moving to Colombia. And I think that was a really big change to uproot myself. But I was like, you know what, if I'm going to reach that goal, I kind of need to do what I need to do to grind. And so obviously that's not everybody has to do that. But I do think sometimes you need to reflect and be like, okay, what is the best decision for my sport or for something that's going to make me better? And even if it seems like a big risk at the start, it really might be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned MEDCO, and I right away, I think discipline, mm-hmm. you know, one, you have the opportunity to go to a school system that is, you know, a choice school system. You get to go to Weston, Whale, and Concord Carlisle, like Newton South. Those are the schools, I think, within that program, maybe a few others. Mm-hmm. But when we talk to athletes that have gone in through the MEDCO program, one, you're up at and out of the house probably by 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
When, you know, your friends in Weston are getting out of bed at 6:37. You're taking a bus in, right? You're in school all day. You have practice till 6 at night. If you have meets, might be 7, 8 o'clock at night. You got to go home. You got to do homework. You got to get to bed. You got to eat. You got to do all that stuff over again. It's like rinse, repeat every single day.
Yeah.
So for discipline, I mean, once you lock that down, I mean, the rest seems like it's like a layup.
Yeah, right? Definitely discipline and time management. I think those are the two biggest things. And again, very blessed to have my parents. My mom was always there kind of being like, you need to get that schoolwork done. And then if I didn't want to wake up at 4 to get to morning practice, my dad was there knocking on my door being like, if I'm waking up, you're waking up.
Yeah, right.
And the moment I got my license, my dad was like, take it.
Yeah, that's right. You can go now. How did that transfer like when you got into college? Like if you were that disciplined in high school, was it just easy for you to transfer into college and keep that discipline in going in the positive direction?
Yeah, I would say so. I think it also made it a little bit easier to kind of be like, okay, like I can't go to this. I feel like a lot of people go to obviously university and think I'm going to party, or like there might be like parties on the weekends. And I think that discipline and time management made me a little bit more aware, like, okay, I can't really do that if I want to be doing really well with the academic kind of pressures that B was giving. And then obviously the swimming, I wanted to continue to improve. I didn't want to just go to BU and like stay at my same level. I had spoken to my coach there, like Coach Bill and Coach Dan, and I was like, I want to keep getting better because I still have my international meets going on as well. And there was a chance that I could have tried to qualify for Rio, and that was kind of always in the cards. So I do think that helped a lot. Also, and I honestly think I got this a lot at Weston when I swam high school there, just because the team camaraderie was so great. Everybody wanted you to get better. I think that's something that's really important when you choose the college that you do your sport at is like, how is that team environment? If everybody else has that same goal, like we want to get better in our sport and we want to do well in school, then I think that kind of helps you stay motivated.
How did your coaches like influence you or help you through the years when, you know, either you were struggling, you know, in the pool, when you were trying to, you know, improve and get better and get to the next level? And then, you know, kind of the second part to that question is, how'd your family help you? We talked a little about how your father was like bang on the door 4 o'clock in the morning to get you out. But how did they influence or help to kind of get you to that, you know, try to drive you to become the athlete that you become?
I think when it comes to the coaches, every coach that has coached me, whether it's just given me one set or like they've had many years in my career, they've always touched some part of my like training and will always have a soft spot in my heart for sure. I think one of the biggest things is the coaches that believe in you, even if like you're not believing in yourself. As you mentioned before, swimming is a very tough sport in the sense that you might drop 0.01, you might add 10 seconds in the same competition, and it can really be a blow to kind of your self-esteem and like all the training you've done in the pool to then come to this meet and be like, this is supposed to be my best meet and I didn't do well. I do really well with coaches that give like tough love. I can't have one that's like really soft on me, but I always appreciate the ones that are kind of like, look, maybe this didn't go the way you want it to go. This is why, but this is how we can continue to improve. Them always being there to continue to inspire me to keep pushing when I'm struggling is something that has been really important throughout my career. And I think with my parents, that's something that's very similar, just because, as you said, like when I didn't have a lot of breaks in my career, it can often lead to burnout. I know there's a lot of athletes that like just train. And after a while, they're kind of like, I'm done with this. And I think in high school, I felt that a lot. So one of the most important moments of my career, I think, is when my parents told me, look, if you're struggling and like you don't want to swim, don't swim. They weren't like continuing to push me, because at one point I was just like, I just can't do this right now. So I played field hockey in high school and I took a little bit of a break from swimming, and I took a break from my club team. And then my parents were like, well, maybe just try swimming in high school. Because at one point my club team wasn't super fond of high school swimming just because it conflicted a bit with the seasons. And my parents were like, look, if you want to just take a break from that and swim high school, obviously your friends are doing it. Like I had teammates that were there. And they were like, try that out. And so I think having that break and having that support from them, knowing that like, okay, whatever decision I make, like they'll be there behind me, really helped me find that love for swimming again. And then like, I mean, I continued, which is really, I think, a great decision.
Do you think if you didn't take that break, you would have ended up in the same spot? Or do you think you would have burnt out and been like, that's it, I'm
no,
done?
I honestly think I was ready to be done. I was like, I'm so done with swimming right now. Because it was the turning point for me. And a lot of people ask me this. It's like when I was applying to universities. So during that time is when the coaches are looking at everything you're doing. And they're kind of saying whether you'll be on the team, whether you'll like actually just make it in. And some of my top choices before, I was just getting rejected. And my dad, being a college coach, was like, Jomar, like, it just happens to a lot of people. Like, you know, you got to kind of find a school where like you'll be at the top, but also you want to keep improving. Or like, do you want to not be the best and then you want to get better that way? Like, again, I'm really blessed that my dad had like that insight. But it was that year, it was my junior year, where I was just like, I'm sick of this. Like, I'm not swimming well. I'm never going to make it to a school that like will give me a good scholarship. And so I don't think I would have kept going if I hadn't taken that break.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of athletes over my career. I mean, just the amount of athletes I see every single year that come through the door. And the burnout is, I mean, it's real. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see it at the high school level. We talk to athletes when they come back from college. They work, you know, they are an athlete for a year or two in college and they drop it because it's just too mm-hmm. much. It really becomes like a 40-hour a week job, right? I mean, you're really, and even more than that. And then you got to keep everything else in order to make sure that you, one, you finish and get your degree, right? And then you're competitive as much as you need to be in order to get to the next level, if there is a next level.
Yeah.
How did your teammates motivate you? How did they have an influence on your ability to be able to get better and to kind of shoot for the Olympics?
Yeah, I think it kind of depends like what teammates you're talking about. So there's some, especially when it comes to training for the Olympics, I had some teammates that I was training with, and I think they obviously helped me in the fact that they were training for the same goal. being with a group of people that were training for the same aspiration motivates you to keep going, because you're like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. And even if the training is hard, just knowing that we're in this together is what really pushes you to kind of keep aiming for improvement, I would say. That's a really big reason of why I had moved to Colombia, just because it was a small group and we were all training for that same goal. And so it being like, before that, I was struggling a bit when it came to swimming. So I was like, I need to be in a place where we're all going to be focused on this one thing. And it didn't seem like it was overbearing, like the Olympics was like this like light at the end of the tunnel. It was more so like, that is the goal that we're all reaching for, and we're all going to work hard together. And then I've had other friends that don't swim anymore, but were there for me to support me for these goals. And I think they were really great because like they understand the sport. So they were there to kind of help me with my whole thought process of like, oh, I'm really struggling. Like, this is really hard. So they can kind of give me their input on that. But then they were also like, Jomar, like there's also life outside of swimming. Like, why don't we talk about other things? So that I think helped me not be too overwhelmed by the sport when training and like when I was locked in.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I think, you know, it's having those people around you to help support. Mm-hmm. And then kind of push the right buttons, right? And I think there's always that understanding that, hey, if I need someone that has my back, you know, can help push me, that's going to bring you. And no matter what you do, whatever industry you're working in, I mean, you have colleagues that you work with that help, or people that help to, we call it, say, mentorship, mm-hmm. right? How do you use that in athletics? Like, how does that help you get to the next level? And it seems like you had the right people behind you, especially, you know, getting to where you
literally
were.
Oh my gosh. Like, I am so blessed. My parents, my coaches, anybody that's touched my swimming career, my friends, big shout out, like Bianca Tachi.
Yeah. I talked
huge
to Bianca.
Shout out to her. She's literally she's always there for me. She actually visited me at the Olympic Village, and there was this sign that was like the team behind the athlete. And she was like, I need a photo on this. And I was like, yeah, you do. Because you were literally the sole person that's helped keep me sane.
She texted me when you were in the pool. She goes, turn on the TV, Julimar swimming. You gotta watch.
No, literally.
I remember that.
She's a legend.
She's amazing. Yeah. That whole family's awesome. Like, I remember. I mean, she was kind of the same, almost cut, like, you think swimming-wise, she was like, would grind. And it's almost like, did she get to the point where the burnout, I think the injuries for her too were tough. I mean, she dealt with a lot of stuff that we had to work with. She said, I mean, her experience was amazing regardless. Like, you know, she said she would never trade it for anything. I mean, I think, and also being able to swim, you know, with you and the teammates was, I think you look back to high school, we talk about this a lot with kids, and, you know, you're never going to have high school again. You're never going to have college again. So enjoy it, right?
100%.
Have fun with your teammates, enjoy it. Cause you can look back and you can have these discussions about, hey, remember that time when we, you know, so I think it's definitely worth a lot, especially to develop as a young adult. As far as, you know, support staff, I mean, like sports medicine, nutrition, sports science, physical therapy, how did that meld into your training once you got into college? And then how did that transition to the Olympic setting or the Olympic like stage? How did that work?
Yeah, I can dig deep into this. So basically, from like high school and then into college, I think I always kind of had the mentality like, I can just kind of fix it myself, like it's fine. I remember going to see you and getting like stem on sometimes like my lower back or like my muscles, because I was like, oh, like this is good. And I didn't really know what was going on, but also I was into sports medicine, so I was like, it's kind of nice to like be able to understand what's happening with my muscles. Then when I went to BU, I had like a bit of a shoulder injury. And so I actually had to be really good about my rehab. Just talking to like, shout out Bridget and Larry are like two people that I absolutely adore at BU. And they helped me when it came to the sports medicine. And Christina. Christina was like my number one person. She would always help me with my shoulder rehab and my shoulder exercises. But they were always there to kind of, also not understand my limit, but also know when I could push myself, but also not injure myself. So I think having them there as like part of my team as well is what helped me continue to be able to do my practices at a high level, but not, this part wouldn't be like a burnout, but like injure myself so that I actually would have to stop swimming. So they helped me a lot. Kind of understanding the importance of like stretching, the importance of rehab, because I think a lot of times I'd just be like, oh, it's fine. Like, I'll just get in. And then I'd be hurt. And then I'd go back, get some ice. And they're like, but did you do your stretches? And I'm like, no, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So having them is really great. And then also, I think they're really also there to support us as like student athletes as well. It's not just like, okay, we're just going to give you your shoulder exercises and you go. Like, I remember talking to Christina kind of not only about my stretches and everything that was going inside the water, but like if I was struggling with my swimming, she was also just there to lend an ear. So that was always great at the BU kind of aspect and from them.
Yeah.
Then later on, I went to a training center in Florida because I got a scholarship to train for Tokyo. There, I didn't have kind of like sports medicine support so much. So I would actually go out of my way to get like massages just because mm-hmm. I knew I would still message Christina and I would know like, okay, if my shoulder's hurting, like what do I need to do to kind of fix this? So that's kind of, I think I would be really good about my shoulder rehab there because I kind of knew from learning what I did at BU and like high school, okay, this is what I need to do if I want to continue to get better. Because in Florida, it was literally just eat, sleep, swim, like straight ground.
Right. Right. And you're on your own, basically, you had someone that was in your back pocket, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, the BU staff's amazing. So you get Larry and the team over there. They're going to make sure, one, you understand what your injury is. Two, you're going to come in and do your rehab every day so we can keep you active and keep you in mm-hmm. the pool. But as a butterflyer, like, I'm surprised you didn't get hurt, like, earlier. Or if you did, like, you're the normal 14, 15, 16-year-old that
just
knows that
going.
They can fix
yeah,
themselves.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I would see a lot of that. But I think the big thing is that to understand your body, that's going to keep you moving in the right direction. You got to take care
of it. Yeah, 100%. And I think that's something that I really realized when I, so post Florida, post Tokyo, struggled a bit when it came to like loving swimming. So then I actually came to London to do my master's. And here mm-hmm. I was swimming, but again, trying to balance everything was a bit of a struggle. So my nutrition kind of took like, I would say, was put on the back burner in that sense because I was just kind of like eating lots of snacks while studying, or I was trying to stay fit, but also I wasn't training at that same level that I was in Florida. And then mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to be connected to my friend's mom. Her name is Sally. She helped me with my nutrition and she was actually so life changing. I think I didn't realize how important nutrition was when it came to sport. And I think I learned it a little bit, not too late. I'm happy I did learn it when I did. But if I had learned it before, mm-hmm. I wonder, obviously, if I could have gotten more improvement earlier on. But meeting with her and kind of understanding how to properly fuel my body just completely changed the game. So then training for Paris while in Colombia, I would talk to her a lot. And then there, I also got my own PT, who I would see like once a week and make sure that I was really on it. Like, I fully locked in when it came for Paris because I had just taken...
That's good.
Yeah, I had taken such a break that I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this right. And I need everybody there on my team. So I really, like, found value in sports medicine and everybody that could help me within that aspect.
That's great. Like, as you started to develop and get older, it sounds like you became a little wiser and chose wisely by getting your own PT, which is great.
Yeah, and actually sports psych as well. I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, which is... It's huge. I mean, we have someone we use at Children's that we've been using for probably about 6 or 7 years now. And she's amazing. Like, if we have an athlete that has an issue stepping back on a field post-injury or just kind of gets in a funk, we'll send them over to see her. And she's very, very, very good. So we're looking at the total athlete. We're not just focusing on the injury itself. We're looking at the psychology behind it. We're looking at the sleep. We're looking at the nutrition. We're looking at everything. Honestly, it's changed over the last 10 years. I mean, since you've been out of high school, mm-hmm. it's like a 180 compared to what we always used to look at. So we're really focusing on the athlete a little bit more to make sure not only physically, but mentally they're in the game and ready to go.
Yeah, 100%. I think 2020, like post-Tokyo, I was struggling a bit when it came to the mental aspect. I personally did feel like the post-Olympic blues, just kind of figuring out where I was going to go next. And I got connected through my university, got connected with the sports psych. So I worked with her from 2022 all the way until Paris. And it really just, that also changed the game for me as well.
That's amazing. How about describing your Olympic experience since we just, you know, chat a little bit about Paris and Tokyo.
Yeah.
What was that like for a young, you know, female athlete coming out of, you know, Weston High School, Medco student, BU? Like, was that always your dream? Or was that just like, did that fall in your lap? Did you like, when you were in college, like, hey, listen, I'm actually going to do this. Like, how did that shape? And then tell us a little bit about what that was like being in that spotlight.
Yeah. So I think the dream started, honestly, that first international competition I went to for Honduras. It was in Guatemala. And it was like the first time I ever got a full uniform, kind of walking around with the team in a different country. And I had won a medal. Wasn't a gold, but I won my first medal. And I think standing on that podium, I was kind of like, one, next race, I'm going to win a gold medal. Two, I can really see this, like, I can see longevity in this career. And I hope that one day this will be on an Olympic stage. Sadly, never won a medal on the Olympic stage. That's okay. But did make it there. And yeah, I think that honestly just fueled me. I was kind of like, okay, every stage that I go to next needs to get bigger and bigger until we reach like the highest level that we can as an athlete. So that I think is when it started. And then just the actual experience was pretty also mind-blowing. The first one was actually crazy because it was Tokyo, so that was pandemic, and worked really hard to get there. But then I think I was just kind of like, you know, I'll do the best that I can. Obviously, I want to compete. I ended up, I had qualified with the 200 meter freestyle, but my coach then switched it to the 200 meter butterfly because he was like, I think this is going to be a really good event for you. And the two fly is actually an event that I'm good at, but I don't want to be good at. Like, I didn't like it at all just because it is a really challenging event. And so then finally, like 1 month before Tokyo, I really locked in while at training camp. And I was like, you know what? If this is the event I'm going to swim, like, I'm going to get really good at it. So I worked on all the small details, yada, yada. Get to Tokyo, pandemic, somebody on my plane tested positive. So I'm actually quarantined while in Tokyo as well. Yeah, fully like, I'm at training camp. It's all normal. Then someone like pulls me and like a few other swimmers aside. And they're like, someone says to positive on your plane. Like, you guys can't train with everybody else. You guys have to go to a separate hotel. I don't know. I was in like such a state of calm. I think because I was like, you know, I'm quarantined, but I'm quarantined in Japan. Like, I'm quarantined, but I'm quarantined at the Olympics. Like, I really just need to take all of this with grace and say, at least I'm here and I've qualified. So yeah, because old me, like right before that, would have been freaking out, being like, oh my God, I'm not swimming. Like, I'm going to swim really bad. But for some reason, everything just kind of worked where I was like, you know what? It is what it is. I'm going to do the best that I can. If I can't touch the water, I'll do what I can in practice. And if I can't, I'll do exercises outside of that. So that's perfectly fine. They finally like moved us to the village, and then even got to train in the Olympic pool when nobody else was there. It was empty because we couldn't be around other people. And my coach at the time was like, look, yeah, you're quarantined. Yeah, you can't train with everybody else. But who else can say that they're swimming in an empty Olympic pool? Like, not even the greats really get that. And I was like, yeah, you're so right.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think because of that logic, then when I actually was racing, I was really nervous. But I was also kind of like, you know, everything happens for a reason. I don't really know the background training that I've done here in Tokyo because I've like, I did touch a pool. I didn't touch a pool before my race. We're just going to go all in and see what happens. And then I ended up like dropping 3 seconds and qualifying for a semifinal. So that really just blew my mind.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then I would say Paris is kind of not the opposite, but I think Paris, I was hyping myself up so much that I know I got really, really nervous. I was like, oh my God, it's actually really happening. I was like, there's a giant crowd. I know there's people in the crowd. My parents are watching. More people know that I'm qualifying for this. So I knew that I was really nervous going in. Whereas I think Tokyo, I was like so blasé that I was just kind of like very, very calm. Paris, I dropped a lot of time. As I said, like an event that I hadn't dropped in like 5 years. I dropped a lot of time to get there. I was a bit disappointed in my actual race because I didn't drop time there. But then I'm also like, Julmar, second Olympics. And this time I actually raced the 200 meter freestyle. So for Paris, I was training for the two fly. I like finally was in love with the event and I was ready to go. And then I ended up just swimming really, really fast in my 200 freestyle. And that's what got me there. And I was like, well, I can be upset, but also why am I going to be upset if this is what's going to end up getting me to my second Olympic Games?
Yeah. And what was the energy like? Like
crazy.
When you were in the pool, it must have been like through the roof.
Yeah, literally. Like you walk. And the thing is like I've been to world championships before, right? I was just kind of like, oh, it's like any other meet. But then you walk out and you're like, no, this isn't like any other meet. Like this is a full on Olympic Games. So it's not even just people are watching because they're sitting here. Like the world knows what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. And
I
think that clicked and I was like, oh my God. But yeah.
I mean, like medal or not, I mean, you have to be proud of yourself to be an Olympian.
Yeah.
Right. There's not a lot of people that can say that. So hats off. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. I think sometimes like, especially Tokyo, just because I did much better than even I think I anticipated doing. I had a bit of imposter syndrome after. And then that's when I started speaking with the sports psych because I was kind of like, how do I get back in the pool after that? But then, Paris, I kind of was like, you know what? Full send. We're just going to go for it. And whatever happens.
That's fantastic. I mean, you have to think about, you know, look back at your training, the younger days, and then, hey, look where I am on the big stage. Mm-hmm. Like, I made it.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's a huge accomplishment. And, you know, again, amazing, amazing job.
Thanks.
As far as when you trained, you know, for the Olympics compared to like your college days, how much more elevated is that? Or is it just you're really focused, you're training just as hard, but now you're just focused on one thing? Like, how does that change from one thing to the next? So for instance, if you're a senior swimming going into the Olympics, your training is not going to change much, but now you're out of school. How does that change?
Yeah. So I think you also kind of dial into like the event that you want to compete at. So with the uni, like while training at BU, I was kind of training like for the 2-fly, the 100-fly, the 100-free, sometimes the 2-free or the 50-free. So there was a wide variety when it came to like the different days and training types. But when I finally kind of locked in either for Tokyo, I guess, as well, because I was training with a club team, there were different kind of days of training. But when I moved to Colombia, I think that was a very specific kind of training focused training, where the coach, and also I think because I've gotten older, it was very much quality over quantity. Like the trainings were very different to what I'm used to, where it was like not a lot going on in the session, but what we did do, we had to do it really well. So I think that was like the one thing that changed. And then also again, because swimming kind of just became my job during that time period, it really was like eat, sleep, swim. And whatever I was doing was to get better at swimming. So I would say that's like the one change, just kind of walking in and then trying to have to find other stuff to entertain myself, to not be so overwhelmed by the sport.
How much dry land was involved? Because you talk about trying to be cross-functional in your, you know, whatever sport you're doing. So whether it's, you know, you're getting out of the pool, if you're, you know, a swimmer, your dry land training, yoga, stretching, like how much of that was part of your training regimen? And did you find that from college to getting to the next level into the Olympics, did that change much or not really at all?
Yeah. So at BU, we did weight training and then we did swimming. And then kind of later on, I would say my junior and senior year, we did a little bit more dry land, like core additions to like some afternoon sessions. And I think that was really good. That was the first time I'd ever done kind of weight training when it came to swimming. And then funnily enough, my freshman year, I was really into yoga. And honestly, my freshman year was kind of one of my best years. And I think the yoga was really something that kind of took it to the next level just because of the stretching and flexibility and kind of like that aiding my shoulder rehab. So that's something I actually then brought back later on when I was training for Tokyo, because that club team is very different from BU, where they did no weight training. My club coach like only liked to do HIIT, and that was our dry land. So it was like dry land 5 times a week. And it was basically different versions of HIIT, which worked for me at that time. And then I would do yoga on my own during, like, if we practiced from like 7 to 9 a.m., then we wouldn't practice again until 3:30. So there was such a break in between that I was like,
you could fit
exactly,
it in.
I could fit it in. And then when I moved to Colombia, I was really good about doing yoga every day. And I think that really helped me. Like yoga every day, I would do on Wednesdays, like a recovery run, which some people would say was crazy, but I was just like, oh, I want to be outside. I want to just like walk around, run around. And that to me was like active recovery, because that wasn't a full day off. It was just a morning session, but I was like, I can either just lay in bed. And I was like, but I'd rather be doing something a little bit more active.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And then Columbia was also weight training as well. So yeah. So I've had different types of dry lands, and I think they all just happened to work really well for like what my body needed during that time period. But one of the reoccurring things, swear, is yoga.
Yeah. I talk to athletes all the time. They look at you like you're crazy. And I say, listen, get into yoga, no matter what level of yoga, if it's just the flow,
yeah,
if it's something that's short, get into it. It's going to change mm-hmm. your life. Because in most of the kids we see, what do they do? They sit all day in class. They get back pain because they're sitting all
yeah.
day, because their muscles get tight, and they go out and play their sport. They don't warm up appropriately. So, I mean, for all the young athletes out there, listen to Julimar.
Yeah, yeah.
I
live by it.
Yeah, it's great. Do you still practice now?
So
yoga?
I haven't. I'm bringing it back. Like, no lie, fully bringing it back.
It's coming
it is
back.
Because I've taken a bit of a break, and then I'm kind of like, yoga was also that time to kind of lock in mentally as well. Whether or not it's like
yeah.
not, even if like I had things about my day that it was coming in, it was just a time to focus on my breathing. And you don't realize how important breath is. But then I read a book about breathing, and I was like, wow, it's actually very important to our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I am bringing it back, because sometimes when I get overwhelmed, I'm like, let me just take 15 minutes to meditate, and now we're good.
Yeah, that's all you need. Just nice, easy, control yourself before you start your day or during your day. And it helps out tremendously. So if you look back on your career, how does that help you in the professional world, becoming an adult and now having to work? Like, how has that training disciplined you in a way that's been positive, or even, I mean, has it negatively affected you, or is it more positively affected you to become more disciplined as a professional?
Yeah, I think it's positively affected me, just in the sense of, like, as you said, discipline, time management, interpersonal skills, just all the times that I've had to talk to other people at different, like, different teams, different countries, all the traveling that I've done, that I've been blessed to have done, I think has improved my communication skills. And also just working with the team, that's something, like, obviously doing a 9-to-5 now, I need to know how to manage and speak with other people on my team when we're working on projects.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one can always classically be like, I am quite competitive, or like sometimes I can be. I think something that I've noticed about me is I live a very fast paced lifestyle. So like, I don't like having free time. And I do kind of relate that back to being an athlete, being like, I would never have free time before, because I was always either doing sport or running around or trying to do so many other tasks in the time that I had, that I wasn't in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I'm kind of trying to take a step back from at the moment, to not live like that, hence the meditating and the yoga. But in the end, I still think, like, I do get stuff done. I'm very much into grinding. I wake up early. I like love to have my morning meetings in the morning, and then like I'll fully do all my work. And I think that's something that's really come from being an athlete.
Yeah, that's great. I think a lot of people that I speak to that are former athletes, they talk about how their discipline as an athlete has just made them better professionally. And if they didn't have that in their lives, they would not be lost, but really, I guess, not organized, right? Because you have to be organized to be successful as an athlete. And you have to take care of yourself and all those aspects we talked about previously, the physical, the mental, and then being able to have time for yourselves. It's definitely paid off, it sounds like. How, coming from a family of coaches, do you ever see yourself coaching?
So my dad keeps mentioning that as well. I do. Sometimes when I was at Imperial, I was like kind of helping out with the coaching of the swim team. And I think that was kind of a nice side that I was doing, being like, okay, I can like swim in the water, and then I can also help people. I like the aspect of like helping people improve. Now I kind of see why my coaches love it, where like you see somebody get better in drop time, and like their stroke improve and how happy they are, and you feel that fulfillment as well. So I do think I would love to coach on the side. I don't know if I would ever go like full time, but my dad's always there like whispering like, why not?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's your, you know, you probably come by it easy, right? Mm. And then I'm sure there'll be an opening at Weston soon. So if you come back to Weston, I'm sure you'll be able to slide right into a coaching position.
Yeah, that'd be good. My dad would be so happy, I think. He'd be like, oh, you're my footsteps.
I'm sure your parents are still, they're still in town, right?
Yeah.
They haven't moved.
But they're planning on it. My dad's kind of getting sick of the cold. Yeah, he's ready to go.
Where are they going to move to?
Well, they don't know if they'll fully move back to Honduras, but they definitely want to move a little bit closer. Yeah. So either like Florida, Georgia, somewhere around there.
Yeah. It's definitely warmer there. But up here, it's been pretty warm as of recent. We've only had like 3 cold days all
fall.
That's
crazy.
So it's been interesting. Yeah. If you look back on your career, who's your biggest inspiration or person that you looked up to during the journey?
Ooh, honestly,
there's probably more than one person, but
yeah. Well, I'll never forget in like third grade, we had to do a project. My person was Mia Hamm, only because I thought she was so cool and just making waves for like women in sports. I think in general, like aspiration wise, honestly, my parents are the people that I look up to the most that have helped me kind of understand like, okay, with discipline and hard work, you can really be successful. And they're also kind of my greatest motivators, not only like as my supporters, but also just to show them, because as we mentioned, like it's not just me. It really is a team behind everything. And like my parents are literally the biggest chunk of that team. The 4 a.m. wake up calls and like, yeah, just all of that.
The drive. Let's go. Yeah. Right. No days off. I like it. It is. It's amazing. You know, you got to look back at how you get to where you are and who are those people that inspire you. And that's, you know, it's, again, it's, you know, you come from a family of coaches. So it's something that, you know, has definitely transcended, which is amazing. Would you change anything during this kind of journey that you've been on for the past, I don't know, 24 years,
so
right?
Many.
23 years?
So many. Honestly, no. I think there were tough times that I wouldn't change them because I do think they helped shape me. They were very tough to go through in the moment. But now that I'm outside of them, I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, that was not great. But at least now if somebody else is going through it, I can talk to them about it and kind of understand it a little bit better. And hopefully I never go down those like little deep holes again, mainly just like either struggling to find like love with swimming or like getting very, very overwhelmed that I just need to like do a full stop of everything I'm doing. Now that I kind of am more in tuned with myself, I hope to never, or not, obviously you can't say never, but to better handle those situations. But I definitely don't think I would change anything. Like all the moves that I've done, luckily have worked out very, very well, whether or not it was like for training or for school or like life changes. So yeah, I feel very blessed that the choices I've made have led me to where I am now.
Well, that's great. I think you've definitely made a lot of people happy on, you know, where you ended up and kind of how you got to that point. And it's nice to know, or nice to be able to say that we've had the opportunity to work with you, or, you know, seen you kind of grow up, which is awesome. To close out today, I think a fun fact about yourself, like what's one thing or maybe something that is fun and exciting about you outside of swimming?
One cool fun fact is my name. So my name's actually a combination of my dad and my mom's. So it's Julio and Marta. So that's something that everyone's like, oh my God, so unique. And I'm like, I know. But I actually have met another girl. I met somebody else named Julmar because her mom was Juliana and her dad was Omar. So like they also had the same idea. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
And then another fun fact, I love to read. I think that's something like Goodreads is like my social media. I love to see what everybody else is reading and how to, different genres and stuff like that. So that's something fun.
Yeah. My daughter does that. She'll send, I'm on the list for some reason. Like she's sending these on my reads and I'm like, why are you sending it? I think because my wife's on it, but it is kind of funny that she reads a ton too. My wife reads. I only read when I have to read, but.
No, I love getting lost.
Yeah. A lot of people. That's good. I mean, it's a good thing to do, right? You need to be able to read to get, you know, increase your knowledge base. And like I said, I do what I have to do, but I'm not, if I'm sitting down, I'm not going to open a book to read a book. I'm probably taking a nap because I've been working
so long.
That's
fair. That's fair. Respect. My dad says the same thing, to be honest. And then my mom is like, yeah. But my mom, I think that's where I get like the reading and school stuff. Like my mom loves studying. So I think that's really helped me in that aspect. But yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mind the learning piece. When we go on vacation, I'll read. I guess I can sit down and do that because I'm not.
You got time off.
You know,
stressed out about
work, but a little bit of time off, which isn't a lot. But hey, Julmar, listen, I truly appreciate you taking the time. I know it's, 7 o'clock in London right now? Right. I think the chef's in back cooking dinner. I don't know what's going on behind
she's
you.
She's chefing it up.
It's like, I heard like salt shakers and pepper shakers and things frying.
It always smells so good. I guess that's another fun fact. That's great. I am a good cook, but like I'm very lazy. But
yeah, well, that's all right. Enjoy the dinner. I appreciate you coming on. If you're back and when you come back to Weston, please come visit. Love to see you and then chat it up again.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I appreciate it. Thanks
Thank
again.
You. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we're committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. This is your host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed today's episode, give us a like, comment, and share it on social media. Access all of our episodes on platforms such as Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast app. Stay updated by following us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X at AJR Sports Sci, or visiting our website at ajrsportsscience.podbean.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science for upcoming content. Thank you for tuning in and stay tuned for our next episode.